Good morning, and welcome to Personal Theology, which is on its 37th year. Today we welcome Dr. Sahara Godfrey, who has followed the teachings of the Buddha since 1989. Her primary practices are compassion and social activities. Dr. Godfrey is a graduate of the Spirit Rocks Community Dharma Leadership Program and the Path of Engagement Program. She received her PhD in the humanities with the focus on transformative learning and change from the California Institute of Integral Studies in Oakland, California. In addition, she is a core teacher in the East Bay Meditation Center. A self-taught mixed media artist, she has exhibited in the Bay Area, Oregon, Washington, Atlanta, and Los Angeles. Her topic today is social responsibility and spirituality, a Buddhist perspective. So let's give a warm welcome to Dr. Sahara Godfrey.
Thank you, Dr. Merrill. Thank you, everyone from the Unitarian Universal Church, and thank all of you for showing up. When I was putting together this talk, I couldn't remember the title. So I said, okay, it has something to do with social justice, I know. This is what happens when you get older. You know, your mind has this sieve, like a colander. And if you don't put a cheesecloth or a thick cloth, it just all eventually goes somewhere. Just like I did in, I thought I had cards. And of course, I go to look and I only have one card. So what I did was put information on one of the sheets, and it has my contact information, it has my website, and also, hot off the press, is a book called Real World Mindfulness for Beginners, and I have a chapter on aging and illness. Ooh, just came out. So I'm really excited, and it's very secular based, and it's very easy to read and follow, and it's something that I think people could really use. So, buy one. Thank you very much. Anyway, I want to acknowledge the ancestors. I want to acknowledge the ancestors who are here with us. And I want to acknowledge all those who have come before us and the shoulders that I walk upon. And I want to acknowledge the four directions and Mother Earth and Father Sky. There's a phrase from a spiritual called Guide My Feet. And the refrain is, guide my feet while I run this race, for I don't want to run this race in vain. Do not believe in anything simply because you've heard it. Do not believe in anything simply because it's spoken and rumored by many. Do not believe in anything simply because it's found written in your religious books. Do not believe in anything merely on the authority of your teacher and elders. Do not believe in traditions because they have been handed down for many generations. But after observation and analysis, when you find that anything agrees with reason and is conducive to the good and benefit of one and all, then accept it and live up to it. And that's by the Buddha. So what I'm going to do in this talk is reference these five precepts that you have a copy of. And the five precepts are part of a moral guideline that is embraced by all Buddhists. And we go, ooh, look at this. It's good we're inside, and thank you for the rain. We need it.
So these precepts are similar to, for example, I was raised Catholic, so I know about the Ten Commandments, and the Ten Commandments are like the foundation. These precepts, which are very similar, I think, to any religious practice, which is about integrity and dignity and ethics and how do I live my life and what guidelines and what tools will help me. Can you all hear me better? Can you hear me? It's a little hard. Okay. I will speak up louder. Okay. Oh, you can turn the volume up? Oh, great. Now can you hear me? Great. Thank you. So these precepts are essential part of the philosophy of Buddhism. And whenever one goes on a retreat, one of the first things we do in the evening to the community is talk about the precepts. Because the precepts are also like the pillars, and they hold the community together, and they're guidelines for all of us to abide by and to respect, so that while we're on retreat, the intention is to create a community of safety and belonging. And expanding beyond a retreat is how do we walk in the world with dignity and integrity, and how do we do this in the context of social justice and social responsibility. The Buddha taught the five precepts from a very basic premise, whereas I'm going to focus on the interpretation by Catriona Reed and Michelle Benjamin Meekly from Manzanita Village. So let me say a little more about the precepts. Let me say a little more about the precepts before I go into them specifically. We can summarize them in relationship to the spiritual qualities they are likely to produce and promote. So if you look at your paper where it says the precepts, I just want you to have in front of you as I reference this. The first one helps promote goodwill, compassion, and kindness. The second can be instrumental in developing generosity, service, altruism, non-attachment, contentment, honesty, and wise livelihood. The third helps to cultivate self-restraint, mastery over the emotions and senses, renunciation, and control of sensual desire, and more than that. The fourth leads to the development of honesty, reliability, and moral integrity. And the fifth helps to promote mindfulness, clarity of mind, and wisdom. So let me go through these precepts. I really, really love them a lot. Aware of the violence in the world and of the power of nonviolent resistance, I stand in the presence of the ancestors, the earth, and future generations, and vow to cultivate the compassion that seeks to protect each living being. This premise is that we're all interrelated, and we're all responsible for the earth. And we're all responsible for each other. So I saw the sign that says Black Lives Matter. And if you really believe that, then you know that all lives matter. And black lives are included in that. But it seems like we kind of get left to the side. But then we have Standing Rock. And we have everyone all over the world and here in support of what is such a basic issue about human rights. And we stand in support of them. The second, aware of the poverty and greed in the world and of the intrinsic abundance of the earth, I stand in the presence of the ancestors, the earth, and future generations, and vow to cultivate the simplicity, gratitude, and generosity that have no limits. A aware of the abuse and lovelessness in the world and of the healing that is possible when we open to love, I stand in the presence of the ancestors, the earth, and future generations and vow to cultivate respect for the beauty and erotic power of our bodies. And so it shifts from the traditional precept, which says, I refrain from sex, abstaining from sex, where this takes a more deeper look at, if we open ourselves to love and we respect our bodies and respect each other, that potential is endless and is possible for respect for all beings, and that maybe there could be less harm to adults and especially to children. Aware of the falsehood and deception in the world and the power of living and speaking the truth, I stand in the presence of the ancestors, the earth, and future generations, and vow to cultivate the ability to listen with clarity and integrity in all I communicate by my words and actions. And the traditional precept is about not to gossip and not to slander and not to use false speech. Where here, we're embracing even what you think is a potential of harm. So how can you reflect on what you think so that before you speak from this place of hopefully discernment and wisdom, even if you're upset or angry, that you still speak from a place of ownership and integrity and not impulsivity and not with the intention to harm. Because even with our intentions, the impact is not always what the intention is. Aware of the contamination and desecration of the world and of my responsibility for life as it manifests through me, I stand in the presence of the ancestors, the earth, and future generations and vow to cultivate discernment and care in what I take into my body and mind. And the traditional precept, I abstain from substances and alcohol. And how these precepts were actually adapted from Thich Nhat Hanh, who has 14 precepts, and his precepts were first written for monastics. But he developed socially engaged the phrase engaged Buddhism back in the 1990s. And so when he redid the precepts a couple years ago, he was very, very detailed in each one, and that's a high bar. So what I really appreciate what Catriona and Michelle did, because they interpreted for how it works for them, and they also understood some of Joanna Macy's work. So this awareness comes with a responsibility. We stand in the presence of the ancestors, so they're always with us. The earth is our witness, and we're part of the earth. And future generations, we hope that what we do will impact the young so that the young can carry forth. And we see this with the Black Lives Matter. We see this with North Dakota. We've seen this with lots of other issues in the world that affect us, including the environment. The ends you serve that are selfish will take you no further than yourself, but the ends you serve that are for all in common will take you into eternity. So when we say aware of the poverty and greed in the world and the intrinsic abundance of the earth, I stand in the presence of the ancestors, the earth, and future generations, and vow to cultivate simplicity, gratitude, and generosity that have no limits. What you're saying is that you're not being selfish, that you are part of the world, and that you're committed, even in your own small way, to make a difference. Returning hate for hate multiplies hate, adding deeper darkness to a night already devoid of stars. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. And that's by Dr. King. And Bell Hooks says, there must exist a paradigm, a practical model for social change that includes an understanding of ways to transform consciousness that are linked to efforts to transform structures. So what we're talking about is not only what you do as an individual and how that can ripple out, like, you know, when you're skimming rocks and then it goes like that in the water, but it's also about how do we affect the institutions that we're part of. We all come from different places of employment where we're part of those institutions. Some of us have created them. Some of us have retired from them. Some of us are on the boards of some of these institutions. What do we bring to the table that says this is all about all of us? The earth is dying. What do we do to support the earth? When asked if I'm pessimistic or optimistic about the future, my answer is always the same. If you look at the science about what is happening on Earth and aren't pessimistic, you don't understand data. But if you meet the people who are working to restore this Earth and the lives of the poor and you aren't optimistic, you haven't got a pulse. What I see everywhere in the world are ordinary people willing to confront despair, power, and incalculable odds in order to restore some semblance of grace, justice, and beauty to this world. And that's from Paul Hawken. And Angela Davis says, sometimes we have to do the work even though we don't see a glimmer on the horizon that it's actually going to be possible. And enough of us have been in this room for a few generations to see so much has changed. I know in my lifetime, I never expected to see a black president. And then to run two terms, it's like, is this really happening? That was beyond anything I thought was possible, given the historical conditions in this country, in the history of race in this country. I'm still in awe of that and really miss them. They brought such grace and dignity to the office in spite of being stonewalled. Every time he exhaled, he was stonewalled. However, they showed the world that you can have compassion and grace and integrity and dignity to everyone's suffering. Now, I'm only going to read an excerpt of this, but it's adopted at the first National People of Color Environmental Leadership Summit, October 24th to 27th, 1991, Washington, D.C. Environmental justice affirms the sacredness of Mother Earth, ecological unity, and the interdependence of all species, and the right to be free from ecological destruction. Environmental justice demands that public policy be based on mutual respect and justice for all peoples, free from any form of discrimination or bias. Environmental justice mandates the right to ethical, balanced, and reasonable uses of land and renewable resources in the interest of a sustainable planet for humans and all other living things. Isn't that what Standing Rock is about? Isn't that what we're supporting? Isn't that part of our life? Isn't that about justice? Isn't that about freedom? Isn't that about the continuation of the planet? Isn't that about vowing to support and be available and teach future generations through our actions? Not so much our words, because they don't listen anyway. But your actions say so much. I believe we are here on the planet Earth to live, grow up, and do what we can to make this world a better place for all people to enjoy freedom. And that was Rosa Parks. And the story goes is that her sitting in the front of the bus was not a revolutionary act in her mind. She was tired. She was tired. She had just got off of work cleaning somebody's house. Got on the bus and was like, I'm not sitting in the back. I'm sitting down. And that whole simplicity of I'm tired and I'm sitting down was a revolutionary act. Some live by love thy neighbor as thyself. Others by first do no harm or take no more than you need. What if the mightiest word is love? And that was part of a poem that Elizabeth Alexander read on the inauguration of President Obama 8 years ago. I can't think of the dates. If there's a place for tolerance and racial healing, perhaps it has to do with tolerating my own feelings of discomfort that arise when a person of any color expresses emotion not welcome in the culture of niceness. It also has to do with tolerating my own feelings of shame, humiliation, regret, anger, and fear so I can engage, not run. For me, tolerance is not about others. It's about accepting my own uncomfortable emotions as I adjust to a changing view of myself as imperfect and vulnerable as human. And that's from Debbie Irving, Waking Up White and Finding Myself in the Story of Race, which is a really, really good book. And John Lewis said, you have to be taught the way of peace, the way of love, the way of nonviolence. In the religious sense, in the moral sense, you can say that in the bosom of every human being, there is a spark of the divine. You try to appeal to the goodness of every human being, and you don't give up. You never give up on anyone. So it's said that the precepts describe the way of enlightened beings' natural lives, and at the same time, the discipline of upholding the precepts is part of the path to enlightenment. So as we begin to work with the precepts, we find ourselves breaking or defiling them over and over. And we can think of this as something like falling off a bicycle, and we can either beat ourselves up about falling off the bicycle, which is disharmonious, or we can get back on the bicycle and start pedaling again. One of the things that I appreciate about the precepts is that it's something to obtain. And what I appreciate about my practice as a Buddhist is it's a practice. So I'm constantly falling off the bike. Actually, I don't know how to ride a bike, so I wouldn't even get on one. And I tried getting on a skateboard, and I almost lost it. I was like, how do these kids just take their foot and ride down the street and not break their hips? No, thank you. But what I appreciate is that I have an opportunity to practice this. I can practice making this vow. I can practice and appreciate standing in the presence of the ancestors when I remember. I can practice and appreciate that I'm committed to future generations. I can practice and appreciate that I hold the long view. And the long view is that we might not see end of racism in our lifetime. We might not see the end of environmental despair or sexism or homophobia and a few of the other isms and ageism and sexism and people with differences, physical and mental differences. We might not see that happen in our lifetime or the end of our lifetime. But I hold the long view that it's possible and it will happen. This is what happens when you don't number your papers. It is essential that we understand that taking care of the planet will be done as we take care of ourselves. You know that you can't really make much of a difference in things until you change yourself, as Alice Walker. This is a poem about hope, and I'm not going to read the whole thing because, well, yeah, I have some time. It says a whole lot of what I'm talking about, so maybe I'll be finished. No. It's a poem on hope, and it's by Wendell Berry. It's hard to have hope. It's harder as you grow old, for hope must not depend on feeling good. And there is the dream of loneliness at absolute midnight. You also have withdrawn belief in the present reality of the future, which surely will surprise us. And hope is harder when it cannot come by prediction any more than by wishing. But stop dithering. The young ask the old to hope. What will you tell them? Tell them at least what you say to yourself. Because we have not made our lives to fit our places, the forests are ruined, the fields eroded, the streams polluted, the mountains overturned. Hope then to belong to your place by your own knowledge of what is that no other place is, and by you caring for it. Lost my place. As you care for no other place. This place that you belong to, though, it's not yours. For it was from the beginning, and it will be to the end. Belonging to your place by knowledge of the others who are your neighbors in it. The old man, sick and poor, who comes like a heron to fish in the creek, and the fish in the creek, and the heron who man like fishes for the fish in the creek, and the birds who sing in the trees, and the silence of the fishermen, and the heron, and the trees that must keep the land. They stand upon us as we too must keep it or die. So he's talking about the interrelationship of all life. This knowledge cannot be taken from you by power or by wealth. It will stop your ears to the powerful when they ask for your faith, and to the wealthy when they ask for your land and your work. Answer with the knowledge of the others who are here and how to be here with them. By this knowledge, make the sense you need to make. By it, stand in the dignity of good sense, whatever may follow. Speak to your fellow humans as your place has taught you to speak, as it has spoken to you. Speak its dialect as your old compatriots spoke it before they heard a radio. Speak publicly what cannot be taught or learned in public. This is what this generation is teaching us. Listen privately, silently to the voices that rise up from the pages of books and from your own heart. Be still and listen to the voices that belong to the stream banks and the trees and the open fields. There are songs and sayings that belong to this place, by which it speaks for itself and no other. Found your hope, then, on the ground under your feet. Your hope of heaven, let it rest on the ground underfoot. Be it lighted by the light that falls freely upon it after the darkness of the nights and the darkness of our ignorance and madness. Let it be lighted also by the light that is within you, which is the light of imagination. By it you see the likeness of people in other places to yourself in your place. It lights invariably the need for care toward other people, other creatures, in other places, as you would ask them for care towards your place and you. So there's this relationship, there's this reciprocity, there's this care, there's this dignity, there's this commitment, there's this vow. No place at last is better than the world. The world is no better than its places. Its places at last are no better than their people, while their people continue in them. When the people make dark the light with them, the world darkens. Wendell Berry. That's my talk. Essentially, he's talking about the Buddhist path and how I understand it. And when we talk, when the tradition, the literature says, you know, nirvana and enlightenment seems to be far away, I hold this belief, this truth, that it can be moment to moment. Last year I was diagnosed with multiple myeloma, stage 3 cancer, and I had 90% of my red blood cells God. And then I went and had the surgery last December. And not this June. June of 2015 is when I was diagnosed. December of 2015, I went into the hospital and had the bone marrow transplant, and it was successful. But I woke up to a hole in my gut, and I had complained about my stomach, so they did these x-rays, and I couldn't find anything. And then they did these CT scan, and they saw this huge hole, which almost killed me. So they had to do 6 damage control operations to try to close it enough so that I could begin to heal. And my daughter was there the whole time. And every time they came out of the operating room, they couldn't tell her if I was going to live or die. And I'm sharing this because it's our connection to people and to community that also helps heal us. And the community was amazing. And my family were amazing. And I'm standing here, and everyone says it's a miracle. And I just give thanks. I give thanks. And it helps me really, really see the connection of all life. I was telling Gloria when I was sitting in the car, I was going over my notes, and I was listening to the gospel song I just mentioned. And I got so moved and teary-eyed because I'm always very nervous before I speak. No one would believe it, but trust me. And I just sat there and I just felt like, you know, it's going to be okay. It's going to be all right. And it was, I just had such a wealthful feeling of gratitude and appreciation. And I thought, well, this is what I have to offer. This is what community is about. This is what social responsibility is. We reach out and we look out for each other. And we ask, you know, say, what do you need? And some people will say no, but you do it anyway, and then walk away. And it's not about looking for thank yous or gratitude. It's like, this is what I would want someone to do for me. And I've learned how to say thank you in so many ways. I think sometimes the challenge with healing is the receiving. So these precepts are something you can live by without even hesitating or thinking twice about them. Because I think for many of us, it holds true. When you vow to do something, you make a commitment. Like if for those who are married, who are entered into that commitment, that union, you vow to be with that person through whatever goes on for the best of both of you. Hopefully, as you grow with each other, you grow in your love and your understanding. But you vow to do that. If you're a parent, you vow to raise your children to be the best human beings, because that's something you believe in, and you want them to be part of this world where they're offering something, not just for themselves, but to the benefit of all beings. Now, they may not think that, but you know, we are proud when our children or people say, your daughter or your son are so well-mannered, and they're so considerate, and they think of others, and they're so thoughtful, and you know, that makes me feel good. Because you pray, Lord knows you pray that they're going to be that way. Because this is about life. This is about connection. This is about love. This is about hope. And this is about maybe this world will be okay when we leave it. But we have to make an effort to help those and model. So this practice, this is what I call my understanding of the Buddhist teachings. All of it's a practice. And the Buddha had more lists for everything, from hindrances and hot feeling tone states and being in your body and being aware of your breath, and talks to lay community and householders. And my premise is not to do as little harm as possible, and to hold to these precepts. And these precepts are the foundation of anyone's practice. So, here we go. Aware of the violence in the world and the power of nonviolent resistance. And I think of Thich Nhat Hanh, and I think of Dr. King, and I think of Aung San Suu Kyi, and I think of Mother Teresa, and I think of Gandhi, and I think of all these young people who are just standing up and saying no. And when the proliferation of young black men became more obvious in the news, the only difference is it's in the news now. But when the world stands up and says, we support this, all lives matter, black lives matter, then what we're doing is standing in the presence of the ancestors, the earth, and all these future generations, and we are vowing to cultivate the compassion that seeks to protect each living being. All life matters. And then if we look at aware of the poverty and greed in the world and all the people who are hungry and starving, and, you know, when you travel abroad and you're in third world countries, there's so much despair, and you really get to see those who have and those who have not, and then come home and just be grateful for what you have. Because for some of us, you could feed a family in a community for a year. A year. So when we understand this, we stand in the presence of the ancestors who are always with us, and this earth, Gaia, and we vow to these future generations that we are going to cultivate the simplicity, gratitude, and generosity that have no limits. And when you practice that, little ones sometimes are like, I want to be just like you, and if they only knew. But it's also a compliment because they see something in you that they want to emulate that makes them feel good and that they're proud. You know, like when a child comes to school and they have that day where they share somebody and they talk about their grandparents or their auntie or their uncle. That's because you have an impact. And then when we are aware of the abuse and lovelessness in the world and of the healing that is possible, when we open to love, I stand in the presence of the ancestors. Again, we'll always be here. This earth, which we hope will be here, and future generations, we vow to cultivate respect for the beauty and erotic power of our bodies. Audre Lorde wrote a book called about this then, about the uses of the erotic. And what she was talking about was not sex. It was about the energy that we carry when we create and the power that comes from that and that manifestation, that beauty that can change the world. She used it through language. So it's not just about what our bodies are doing, but respecting and caring. And then if we do this, hopefully the child abuse would stop. Hopefully the trafficking of young women would stop. Hopefully the not refusal to educate young women would stop. Hopefully the abuse of all people, all prisoners, all life would stop. But we have to be committed to that. And that's a huge commitment. But if we vow to do it, we know it'll take a lifetime. It's a practice. And then when we're aware of the falsehood and deception in the world and the power in living and speaking the truth, this has to do not just with what I say or you say or the conversations we have. This has to do with social media and the television, and we can just go on and on about politics, which we will not. But that power of how it influences what you think is not to be neglected. It's such a powerful entity. Then we have social media, and then we have all of that, and then we have the technology that continues. How do we hold that in speaking our truth and vowing to cultivate the ability to listen with clarity and integrity in all I communicate by my words and actions? And we can just look at the political arena, and just through the words and actions, there's so much that's not consistent. So what do you believe, and who do you believe? Who do you trust? And then when we talk about aware of the contamination and desecration of the world, there's not much more that needs to be said about that. It's all around us. Species are dying. I just recently saw on Facebook that in North Dakota, over 1,000 buffalo just appeared and were part of that whole place. And I was thinking of the power of healing, the power of spirit, the power of the land, the power of the earth, the power of life. And my responsibility for life as it manifests through me. There's not much I can do, but I can support, I can talk about it, I can make connections. My granddaughter thinks I'm woo-woo, but she loves me. She's like, oh, that's my grandmother. And my grandson, you know, he's 6'6" now, and he's finishing high school, and he's like, you know, now I'm a man, and I can take care of everything. And I'm just like, oh, Lord. I remember when you were itty-bitty baby. But this is the next year. This is the future generations. And I feel very proud of what my daughter's accomplished, and I know that they're going to do good in the world. Because of the values you teach your children, or those that are impacted by your life through your actions and your relationships. It's about integrity, ethics, responsibility, and dignity, care. And how I hold the Buddhist teachings, it's about love. So the Dharma to me, the teachings are about love. I stand in the presence of the ancestors, and for many cultures, it's a given. The ancestors are always with us. It's not even need to be acknowledged. It's acknowledged out of respect, but it's a given. So wherever I go, no matter what retreat I'm on, I always make an altar for the ancestors. So they're with me, always. And this, we know that we're all going to die soon or someday, and we've had the joy of living this long through the ups and downs and the strife of life. But we're still here. So we have something to offer. Whether they choose to receive it or not, let our actions speak for us, ourselves. Let our actions speak for what we believe in. Let our actions reflect that all life matters. So it's like I cultivate discernment and care in what I take into my body and mind. So we can just say, okay, this can be about food, this can be about drugs, this can be about drinking, it can be any of those things, but it can also be about life. Who do I choose to be around? I take that in, and I reflect that back out. There is a trend now towards people living together in communities. It's probably cost effective for so many of us because the economy is just scary. But how do you live in that community? What do you take in? How do you reflect? Who are you? It's a commitment. And freedom, liberation is moment to moment to moment. So sitting here and standing here, I'm noticing the rain. I see everyone's faces. People seem to be attentive. I can feel the air. And I'm really present. I can feel my feet on the ground, this thing, podium holding me up. And I'm present. And in that moment, there's an experience of liberation. So even if you're present with pain, you're in the present moment, and that can be a moment of liberation. And you know, I just realized that when I was sitting in the car worrying about this moment, these moments, that I had an experience of grace, and that was liberating. So here's an invitation, and I'm going to end with this, and we'll open it for questions. Make of your kitchen a hearth where you're warm and nourish your life. Make of the sky over your town your temple where you refresh yourself daily. Make of the people in your town your beloved to rediscover with kindness each day. Make of the earth of your town your own garden where you gaze with intention each day. Make of your life a steady flame of delight. Look around you in this moment and see how all of this pierces us with pain and such happiness. By Elizabeth Barber. Thank you for your attention. So we're going to open it up for questions and comments, and I would just invite you to be brief because I imagine everyone's going to raise their hand. So I want to get it to as many people as possible.
You know, it seems nowadays that people, groups are more willing to resort to violence and hate in order to effect change. It seems like it's quite different from what you're talking about. But it seems like there's more of a trend to want to use violence to effect change. You know, many kinds of change. That's what I see. I see it in my own neighborhood, in downtown Oakland, breaking windows and burning cars and all that kind of stuff. I mean, what's going on?
Well, I can't speak to... I think it's a very good question, and I think it's a quandary that we're in, because I remember reading a quote that's saying that riots is a response to injustice. It doesn't necessarily mean it's the most effective or appropriate way to handle suffering. But there comes a time sometimes where you have to say notice, and you pay a price for that. But some people are willing to pay that price. I don't necessarily think that might be the most effective way. And I think I get a little nervous because I grew up when violence could cause you your life. And it still does. But now it's not as immediate as it was when I was growing up. It's still painful and still suffering. And I don't have any, there's no easy answers to that. I know that in some countries, in order for change to happen, so many lives are lost, but change happens. So who are we to say? But it does come at a price. And then the question is, how effective is it? And is there a way to do it where you don't resort to violence? And are you effective? And does anything change? So it's a quandary, and it's a very good question. Thank you.
Dr. Sahara, how did your journey coming as an African American and then coming to Buddhism with its standing and holding the anger and letting it dissipate and, you know, coming out of our tradition and do you know what I'm saying? It's not allowed. You know, when I talk about sitting with energy, it's like, no, do something. Don't.
Right. Thank you. Well, I think of Dr. King, and he sat with it until he had to do something, and he did something. And I don't feel like we're considered the popular kids in the class. I was a nerd, so I wasn't really popular at all. Nerd and smart and wearing glasses? Oh, come on. So I was typical, oh no, but a stereotype. But I hold the long view. And I think what I appreciate that there's different ways to be effective. And I can stand in support and not necessarily condone that approach. But I support the intention. The impact can be profound from, I don't want to hear about this and why are they doing that and these people are destroying property to, oh my God, what does this mean? You know, so who knows how it will be received. I'm responsible for my intention and what I say and what I do. And I truly believe in that ripple. So that's how it goes out in the world. It's a hard place. It's a hard place. I'm here to stay alive. I got through something that was unbelievable from what everybody tells me, because those first 2.5 weeks, I have no memory of it. And so it wasn't my time. So maybe this is what I'm destined to do for the rest of my life, and that's okay with me. And we all have our own way of telling the truth as we see it. And can we be open to differences? And can we be open to, well, it's not my perspective. And can we be open to learning and receiving as well as teaching? Can we be open to love? Thank you. Yes.
I think one of the main principles of Buddhism is non-attachment. And I'm finding I am very attached to not getting older or not decline. I'm 75, and I'm noticing mentally and physically I'm starting to decline. And I'm concerned about that. I don't want to decline. Can you offer some advice on, I mean, it's going to happen. How do I accept it?
And that's the conundrum. Equanimity is the practice of accepting things as they are. And can we be with that? I'm attached. I'm not necessarily attached to my body anymore. I mean, I almost died, so it's like, oh, okay, so it's there. But I'm attached to losing my daughter or my grandchildren or them going before me. Those things really worry me. And what I learn and what I'm still struggling with and still making some sense of is, how is that attachment affecting me? Is it causing me more suffering? Am I clinging and not wanting things to change? Am I accepting that they change, that they're going to move away and become their own beings? Can I love them and know that they're going to be in a whole, they're in a different world? They don't even live near me. They don't even live in this state. So can I be able to accept that and not have as much attachment to that? So then that the suffering or the pain of the fear of anything happening to him dissipates. But around getting old, we get old. Around getting aging, we age. How can we bring care and kindness to our bodies? You know, you wake up and it's like, thank you, I'm awake. You get out the bed, thank you, I'm out the bed. You know, you put your clothes on. Thank you, I can put on my clothes. So if every little step is thank you and gratitude, it brings a different appreciation. Thich Nhat Hanh has this practice that, can you love even brushing your teeth? I'm like, I'm looking in the mirror and I'm like, oh no, no. But it's a practice. It's a practice of appreciating this is my body as it is right now. And thank you for what you brought me to, which is I'm still here. And accepting that our bodies change and we get older. And that is a practice. And the Buddha talks a lot about old age, sickness, and death. Because that's what happens to all of us. Can we be with that? Can we be with that with dignity and with care and with kindness? And when we get upset because we don't remember things, we can't find where we put something, or for the life of me, I cannot remember my child's name from time to time. And when I woke up in the hospital and she was there and she said, hi, mommy, you know, and I just saw her. I knew this was my daughter, but for the life of me, I don't know her name. And I was like, Lord have mercy. I'm not going to tell her. But you know, it's life. It's what we hold. It's our bodies. Can we love them as they are? Maybe one more?
I just want to say thank you for your wisdom.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. This thing, I was thinking about wisdom, actually, and I was thinking it has nothing to do with age. It has more to do with discernment and learning what is the most appropriate thing I can do in the moment. Even though I know I forget that all the time. But I think that life has given me some roadblocks that I found some other alternatives to get down the street. So thank you. Last call. Last one I met.
Thank you very much for
You're welcome.
Sharing your wisdom. I had a question about being in the present moment.
Yes.
Giving one liberation.
Yes.
Can you speak a little more to that? The liberation piece.
Yes. All right. I want everyone just to let your eyes close if that feels comfortable for you. And take a deep breath. Nice, full, deep breath. And then take one again. A nice, full, deep breath as much as you can. And then take one more. And what do you notice? What do you notice in your body? Maybe you have different feelings and you're listening to the rain. Maybe your bones ache and you're ready to get up and move around. What do you notice? And then perhaps just for a moment, pay attention to your thoughts. There are probably a whole bunch of them running through your mind like pew, 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 pew. And just notice that. No judging. This is what it is. And when you're ready, let your eyes open. So, that was a moment of liberation. You are in this moment. You are aware of your feelings. You are aware of your thoughts. You notice your mind just going a gazillion places, most of us. You maybe notice your breath. In your body, you might notice you've been sitting still, or your legs are crossed, or your hands are on your lap. But you're aware of what's going on in this moment. And that can be a practice of liberation. And it can be with anything. It can be with what you're about to say, what you are saying, an act you're about to do, a reprimand you might have to give, or just taking care of yourself, being in this moment. And I like to describe being in the moment as having the awareness of being with what is right then, because it'll change. Thank you. So I would like to end with this poem prayer from a friend of mine who is an African-American lesbian Zen priest, and she has a Zendo in Oakland, East Oakland. And it's called For All Beings by Zenju Earthland Manual. And I put it on the copy of the precepts. So you're welcome to share it and use it widely. Just remember to credit her. May all beings be cared for and loved, be listened to, understood, and acknowledged despite different views, be accepted for who they are in this moment, be afforded patience, be allowed to live without fear of having their lives taken away or their bodies violated. May all beings be well in its broadest sense, be fed, be clothed, be treated as if their life is precious, be held in the eyes of each other as family. May all beings be appreciated. Feel welcomed anywhere on the planet. Be free from acts of hatred and desperation, including war, poverty, slavery, and hate crimes. Live on the planet housed and protected from harm. Be given what is needed to live fully without scarcity. Enjoy life, living without fear of one another. Be able to speak freely in a voice and mind of undeniable love. May all beings receive and share the gifts of life. Be given time to rest, be still, and experience silence. May all beings be awake. Thank you so much for your attention.